Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
My boy's waiting, smart.
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Andrew Garda.
I'm friggin' velvety smooth.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda, and we are one step closer to the NFL playoffs, and things are, I wanted to say things were solidifying, but they're really, really very murky. Unless you happen to be a Packer or a Niner fan, pretty much everything's up in the air, but that's okay. That's what makes this a league we love to watch and follow. And it gives me an awful lot of things to talk about. So we are definitely going to talk about the playoff races once again, as we will do every week until week 17. We will also talk a little bit about a boy named Sue and his continued issues off and on the field now, as Dominique Sue had an incident involving an automobile and an automobile accident that has become more and more murky as time has gone on. I'm also going to talk a little bit about an article that is over at BleacherReport.com called Five Disturbing Trends Facing Today's National Football League. My take on some things that the NFL, despite being at the top of the sports heap, really needs to take a look at and examine. So we'll talk about that as well. We'll also go over my NFL picks. We didn't do that last week. In fact, I think it may have been 2 weeks since we've done that. And I know all you people were betting against everything that I said, so I probably cost you some money because you had to guess at what I would have picked so you could pick the opposite, and that's just mess. So all that and more. Again, you're listening to The Hard Count, the NFL podcast at CheeseheadTV.com. I am Andrew Garda. You can always catch me over at CheeseheadTV.com. Each week I do my article from the press box. And you can also catch all of my fantasy football stuff over at footballguys.com, where I do my weekly fantasy triage article, which, let's see, it's Tuesday night somewhere on 11:30. It'll probably post tomorrow morning. And I do my Thursday night lights breakdown of the Thursday night football game and all the fantasy possibilities therein. And I also write over Bleacher Report, and as I mentioned, we'll be talking about an article. I'm doing an NFL article a little bit later on. And of course, I try and keep the Packer fans a little bit under control. It's hard to do that right now. And I said this last week. It's tough to keep the Packer fans down because, let's be honest, they're undefeated. And there's no keeping a Packer fan down. The Packer fans are a little overexcited today. A little overstimulated because there was a sale on Packers stock. I had a grand plan to buy a controlling share of Packers stock and then dissolve the team, but then I was informed that that's not how that works, apparently. Pretty expensive. It was like $250 plus another, what, $25 handling fee? It was interesting to see different reactions about it. Listen, I don't begrudge anyone. If you have the extra cash and it's something you want to do, as long as you realize that you're buying a piece of paper and it's just a document to frame and put on your wall, there's no real power to it. You can go, I think, to the shareholder meetings. I mean, it's a very expensive souvenir. Nothing wrong with that. As I said on Twitter, if the Jets offered it and I had a disposable income and then I broke into laughter because that's never going to happen. But let's say in Bizarro World, I had disposable income and the Jets did it. I might be moved to buy it. Listen, you're supporting your team. There are a lot of ways to do that. You could say this is a silly one, but is it any sillier than, you know, buying an Eagles hat? Is it any sillier than, you know, any other way? Hell, is it any sillier than $1,500 PSLs? Not really. It was cheaper, too. So Packer fans a little overstimulated today, but that's all right. It's okay. When you are the Packers, you can get that. I haven't heard any new information on the Nagler-Rodgers beef, by the way. So we're all anxiously awaiting Aaron Rodgers coming back onto Twitter so we could find out what his beef is with Aaron Nagler, he of the Packer transplants, and Nagler's Newcastle. If you are a Packer fan and you haven't checked out Newcastle's with Nagler, sorry, Nagler's Newcastle is what I called it, but it's Newcastle's with Nagler. Is definitely worth a listen. And I'll tell you what, if you're not a Packer fan, still worth a listen, because not only does Nagler know his stuff football-wise, it's kind of an interesting perspective on a team that's doing very well, and it's a perspective you don't hear as much with the mainstream media and everything. Not so much that, you know, he's telling you things that you won't hear anywhere else, but his perspective, Aaron's perspective, is unique to a person who is at once a fan and also a member of the media. So I always love to listen to him talk football, and it's an interesting insight into the Pack. So enough pimping other people's stuff. Let's get to the meat here. Let's talk a little bit NFL football. First of all, let's start with, like I said, a boy named Sue. And Johnny Cash might have had it right, because a boy named Sue is nothing but trouble. This past weekend, Domicon Sue was in a car accident. And it was sort of, had a car accident. Everybody's all right. Move on. Turns out as of Monday that maybe it wasn't that simple. Apparently one of the passengers in his car claimed that Sue was less than truthful regarding his claim to police that he wasn't driving faster than the posted speed limit of 25 miles per hour and that no one in his car was injured. Supposedly, the various and sundry people in the car were led to believe that it would be bad for their health if they, like, made more of a problem with for Sue with the police. That is all hearsay. The police have already told the Associated Press they're not going to look into the situation anymore. Of course, there's always the possibility that there will be a lawsuit involved. But this just sort of, I mean, at this point, we've looked at Domicon Sue, and I, up until the attempted curb stomp from the Packers-Detroit Lions game on Thanksgiving, I was a pretty big Sue defender. I mean, honestly, I have to say that the nasty demeanor with which he plays the game is not that big a deal to me. You know, it's one of those things where, let's be honest, it's what you want in a defender. You want a guy who's looking to crush the opposition. And I never felt like he was a dirty player. I have to say, I'm starting to come around to the idea that Sue's dirty. Started with the curb stomp. Then you read reports that even in college, he was a little bit feisty with his teammates when they were practicing. Sure, you go 100%. You go 100% when you practice. But there's kind of a line, and apparently Sue crossed it. You know, and you look at the Lions team, you look at this past weekend in their game, Titus Young getting into it. Nick Fairley, I mean, that's not really a shock, because Fairley kind of had the rep of a dirty player. But the personality of that defense, I mean, you want a nasty mean streak, but there's, I think, a difference between, say, the Steelers' mean streak and what the Lions are developing. And it's disappointing. It's disappointing, because I really respect Sue as a player, and I don't know the gentleman as a person. He's not a guy that I've met. I can't say the same, you know, for a lot of different guys. You know, I've met fellas like Von Miller. You know, I've met other defenders. Haven't met Sue, so I can't speak to the type of person he is personally. But really, I mean, something's up. And something's up in a way that, you know, someone needs to slap him. He needs his head put on straight. He needs someone to sit him down and go, listen, you're heading down the wrong path. You are a guy who has a tremendous amount of talent. And if you continue to play the way that you are, it's not going to end well for you. He's a guy who, it's early, I don't want to go nuts, but he appears to have potential Hall of Fame talent. He is an incredible player. If he starts getting the rep of a dirty player, I mean, James Harrison can let him know how that feels and how that goes. I mean, that guy can't, I mean, he gets a flag for looking at a quarterback the wrong way. Sue's heading there, you know, and what's worse, at least in terms of the curb stomping incident, is he came out and he was like, no, my foot got caught and stuff. And no, your foot, like, you weren't trying to disentangle yourself. You tried to stomp on the guy's head. Right, I've had people piss me off. Today even. I mean, you got to control yourself. You have to play under control. Because you get stupid penalties like that, and you cost your team. I mean, Sue's not in there. Suddenly, they don't have him to pressure Rodgers or whoever else. I mean, you know, whoever else they play from here on out. And honestly, I mean, you're going to cost your team the game. Yeah, they need Sue there. They need Fairley there. I mean, the two of them together, that's a hell of a defense right there. That's going to make quarterbacks think twice about how long they can stay in the pocket. But, you know, we've seen DeSean Jackson potentially lose his team games and certainly yards because he can't avoid being a jackass. Steve Johnson over in Buffalo, you could argue he cost his team a game against the Jets because he decided it would be hilarious to do a Plaxico Burress impersonation. And listen, you know, from an outside perspective, in a vacuum, it was funny. I mean, it was a little rude, but it was funny. Cost his team 15 yards. Didn't need that. Now, you know, on top of it, Johnson dropped two potential touchdowns. But, you know, you cost your team games. You cost your team yards. You cost them downs. You cost them the game. Sue's heading down that road. You know, DeSean Jackson and Steve Johnson may have moronic moments. But it's kind of a different level when you're trying to put someone's head through a turf. So Sue at this point really is already, I mean, only a couple years in, kind of at already a crux or a crossroads in his career. I'm not saying, like, if he goes down the dark side path, he's Darth Vader. Darth Vader the Raider there. But he's a guy who right now he can kind of choose which way he's going to go. You know, either way is fine in some respects, but you got to control your temper. And I think it would behoove you to examine how you play the game. And you know what? When you try and stomp on someone, I mean, seriously, at some point you have to say, all right, I was out of control, or I'm sorry. I mean, at least apologize to the guy. That's the worst part with Sue, is he didn't, I'm not going to apologize to him. I'll apologize to the fan and my teammates. That, you sound like a jerk. And the NFL's not going to look kindly on that. And so you end up suspended for two games. And guess what? Two games that your team could really use you on the field. The Lions could really use Dominican Sue over the next couple weeks. Or, well, one more week. But it could have used him last week and could use him this week. It just, you're just hurting your team. And eventually your teammates are going to get sick of that. So Dominican Sue looking more and more like a bad citizen, which is unfortunate. I think he has a tremendous amount of talent, but the guy just plain stupid and really just flat out nasty and not in a good way. There's a lot of discussion right now. Sorry, I should have said, moving on. there's a lot of discussion right now based on the... How do I say this kindly? The subpar performance of Blaine Gabbert in the Monday Night Football game. Some might say sucky. I leave you to decide what you want to describe it as. I mean, mind you, Blaine Gabbert isn't exactly getting the best support. Just had a massive coaching change. The offensive line has issues. And the wide receivers are not a great group. When your leading wide receiver is someone you cut, like Jason Hill. I mean, let's just think about that. If you feel like you can cut your leading wide receiver, you're not thinking much of your wide receivers. Mike Thomas fits better in the slot. Mercedes Lewis is MIA this year. The tight end we thought was going to take a step forward. Instead, he might have. Maybe he took a step forward, but he fell off a cliff if he took a step forward. So Gabbert, you know, Gabbert's got not as many weapons other than Maurice Jones-Drew. He doesn't really have much to work with. Mind you, I've never seen anybody as scared in the pocket as Blaine Gabbert has been in the last few games. Like, David Carr looked at him and went, "Damn, son." Ken O'Brien, former Jet quarterback, looked at him and was like, "Dude, show some balls." Jim Everett's wondering exactly how Gabbert can't stand in the pocket, that it can't be that bad. He's in shock. Gabbert just doesn't look comfortable. He rushes his throws, even when he has time. He doesn't trust that offensive line. That's a big deal. But I don't think you throw Gabbert out right now. I think you need to give him some time to develop. Do you maybe bring in someone to compete with him? Sure. That's wise. I think that's a great idea for a young quarterback anyway, and you don't know for sure. You know, Gabbert had a habit of pulling the ball down and running quicker than he should have when he was in college. And there were a couple times when he would freak out a little bit in the pocket in college. Right now, he just looks scared in a way that even back in Missouri, I just didn't notice. Didn't see the way that I do now. Yeah, NFL's a much different beast. That's something that can change. I mean, you can... this is not going to sound right, but you can man up and decide, all right, I got to stand in the pocket. I need to lead this team. I need to be in there. You know, here's the other thing, and I don't know if this is him or the play calling, and probably a little bit of both, but he won't go downfield. He doesn't throw the ball long. We know he can. We know he has the arm to throw long, but they don't have him do it. And I don't know if that's an offensive coordinator thing, a Gabbert thing, or both. Very similar questions that I have when it comes to the Jets with Mark Sanchez and Brian Schottenheimer. Is Schottenheimer not calling the long ball because he doesn't trust Sanchez to throw the long ball? Is Sanchez having that option but chooses not to because he's too spooked in the pocket? It's the same question. The part, and this is what has kind of forced me to bring this up, the part of this entire conversation that is driving me nuts right now is the, oh, well, God, how bad off is Jacksonville? If only they'd taken Tim Tebow. Now, Skip Bayless, professional troll for ESPN, was out basically saying, well, Jack Del Rio would be a possible head coach of the year candidate. Oh, Tebow mania in Jacksonville. He was a local boy. He'd be great. Okay, let's have this conversation now. This is a straw man argument. This is a bizarro world A plus B equals C argument. But the numbers that you pop into A and B do not total C. Let me explain here. Tim Tebow is having success in Denver. Can't deny it. It ain't pretty, but it works. And as I said last week, all respect to John Fox for forming this defense around Tim Tebow's strengths. And he has them. He has strengths. I've always said he did. I just didn't know if he could become a pocket passer and effective in the NFL. Well, guess what? It turns out to be effective in the NFL for Tim Tebow doesn't necessarily need him in the pocket. Although they have mixed in more general average NFL plays as opposed to just the spread, just the option. Interestingly, by the way, and this was pointed out by fellow football guy and good friend Cecil Lammy over on 102.3 The Ticket in Denver on his daily show, which you can catch if you're in Denver between 9 and 11 in the morning every day. You could also catch him on the web, denversportsstation.com. I like listening to Cecil, so I listen to it quite frequently. And he was saying today, and I remember this, Von Miller, their number two pick, or their first pick, number two slot, you know, Cecil was saying back in Mobile last year, hey, this is a guy Denver might be interested in. But Denver didn't play a defense that fit Von Miller. And a lot of that was said when Von Miller was actually picked by Denver. Von Miller, the hipster linebacker. Cecil pointed this out. John Fox and the staff have actually put together a defensive scheme that fits Von Miller. They're not forcing Von Miller to do something that he doesn't do well. They are saying, this is what he does. He is one of our best guys. Everyone else can kind of do other things. Let's form this defense around Miller's strengths. And it's been very successful this year. And it's the same thing they did with Tebow on the offensive side. And I find that fascinating. That says to me a lot about John Fox. A lot about that staff that they're willing to say, I mean, to really buck an NFL trend in a lot of ways. Because I remember Jonathan Vilma, great linebacker for the Saints and at one point for the Jets. Eric Mangini came along. He wanted to run the defense a certain way. Jonathan Vilma did not fit that. They tried to round hole, square peg it, and it didn't work. He ended up in the Saints. Oh, lo and behold, he was really good with the Saints. Didn't suck as much as he did with the Jets under Mangini. Shocker. NFL coaches like to do their thing. And if you don't fit that scheme, they will try and jam you in there. And if that doesn't work, you end up traded or cut. And more 9 times out of 10, you go to a better situation for you. Anyway, sorry. Backtrack. So Skip Bayless, and there's a lot of other media doing this, saying, if only Jacksonville had taken Tim Tebow, what a different team this might be. Now, I'm not going to dismiss that out of hand. I mean, you look at what Tebow's doing right now. He's being successful. I can't argue that he would sell jerseys and he would sell tickets in Jacksonville. Homegrown hero, Florida. Florida loves him. Would have happened. The problem with that little if-then is that Jacksonville is a much different team than Denver. And further, John Fox and Jack Del Rio are not remotely the same coach. John Fox loves to run the ball. John Fox will run the ball all the time. John Fox, Andy Reid, and Mike McCarthy get together and Andy Reid and Mike McCarthy try and explain to John Fox how you shouldn't have to run the ball, and John Fox laughs at them. Like, talk about, you know, some coaches with opposing philosophies who, well, I mean, take Andy Reid out of the equation for this comment, but are being very successful right now. But anyway, nobody likes to run the ball like John Fox. Jack Del Rio, it doesn't function the same way. Now, they give Maurice Jones-Drew the ball a lot in Del Rio's time. A lot. So there is that. But do you think for a second that Jack Del Rio was going to reform that offense to be a spread option? I mean, think about for a second before you answer that. Think about for a second the fact that when John Fox started talking about doing this, the league, it just exploded. It's not going to work. It's never going to work. There's no way this is going to happen. Goes and flies in the face of every single thing that we as football fans know. That we as football media know. Flies in the face of everything that we know to be true, logical, right. It casts everything into doubt. This does not compute. I've said this on Lammy's show. I said this on a show this weekend on the radio in Illinois. If you've ever seen, you guys know I'm a movie buff. If you've ever seen John Carpenter's Thing, there is a scene where Kurt Russell is sitting playing like computer chess, which in and of itself is hilarious because it is the world's oldest computer chess computer. He's drinking scotch, computer beats him. Pours the scotch and shorts out the computer. All right. I'm the computer. The Broncos are Kurt Russell, and the scotch is Tim Tebow. That offense fries my brain. I cannot figure it out. I'm in. I'm watching. It intrigues the hell out of me. I can't wait. Like, next to the draft stuff that I need to start editing right now, going over the Tim Tebow games off-season is going to be a really interesting project for me. Because I can't figure it out. And you know every single defensive coordinator is going to look at every Tebow game and figure out how to try and break this spread offense. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. That's a question for next year. But Del Rio, I mean, in the face of all of that stuff, and given that, unlike John Fox, who's coming into a new situation and has a little bit of rope to hang himself with, Jack Del Rio was hanging on by the thinnest of threads at the beginning of this season, or last season, probably not going to change the offense to be a spread option offense because it doesn't work. Because it never works. If A then B equals C, doesn't work that way, guys. Listen, national media, you can't just plug Tebow into the Jacksonville Jaguars and figure everything was going to be okay. I'll flip the script for you. If Tim Tebow had been taken by the Jacksonville Jaguars 2 years ago, he would have failed. He probably would have ended up in the quarterback position before the end of the season. And I can almost guarantee you JDR does not make it a spread option. And Tim Tebow in a standard offense, John Fox has said it, and he is dead right, Tim Tebow will fail in that offense. He's not ready. Maybe one day he'll be able to do it, but not now and not last year. Plus, I mean, it makes him give up Tyson Alualu, who has been a very good pick for them. You know, I get the similarities. The Jacksonville defense has been very good this year for the most part. They're getting a little beat up now, but overall very good. Denver's defense come on really, really good. Part of the reason Tebow gets to do what he does in the fourth quarter is because the defense keeps it close. Okay, so similarities there. MJD, much better running back than Willis McGahee, although McGahee incredibly underrated coming into this season. Wide receivers are almost a wash. I'd probably take Eric Decker over just about anybody on the Jacksonville Jaguars, wide receiver-wise. Demaryius Thomas as well. Eddie Royal. Eddie Royal's like the Mike Thomas of that group, only taller. But better wide receivers in Denver. Offensive line. I'd say right now I'd give Denver the offensive line nudge. So he'd actually be in a worse situation in Jacksonville right now. I can't say it wouldn't work because it didn't happen. But I will tell you that it is not fait accompli. It is not automatic that if Jacksonville had picked up Tebow, Jack Del Rio would be head coach of the year, would even be employed. Not definite that Tebow even would be employed right now. And it's lazy. It's lazy to make that comparison. Lazy. It's easy, cheap trolling. Because we know Jacksonville, we know the fans wanted Tebow, or a chunk of them. We know he's a homegrown boy, Florida guy, big, big fish in a Florida pond. It's lazy. When you tell me that if Tebow was a Jaguar, Jack Del Rio would be employed, and they'd be winning like Denver is, then you're telling me that you haven't been paying attention, that you don't pay attention to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you don't pay attention to the Broncos, and you have no idea what you're talking about when you're talking about Tebow, or Jack Del Rio, or John Fox. Square hole, round peg. The Denver Broncos are a unique situation. It is a confluence of events that you have not seen before and probably will not see again, although, you know, it's a copycat league. And at this moment, people are looking at that spread option going, I wonder if this could work. Josh Johnson, he could leave Tampa Bay. We could pick him up. He'd be good. Oh, what if Robert Griffin coming in from Baylor? Yeah, that's a guy we could draft and maybe do this. You'll probably see some people work it. But the only reason we're talking about it is because John Fox managed to do it in Denver right now. That same thing is not assured in Jacksonville. And I have to say, I'm with an awful lot of people who are sick of hearing the comparison. Jacksonville, your life may be better if Tebow was there, but don't buy into the forced lie that Tebow is the solution to your problems. Your team has much bigger problems than quarterback. So we're going to take a little break here, and then when I come back, we're going to talk some playoff possibilities and also my picks going into this weekend. You are listening to The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. See you on the other side. I'm going to go get a drink of water. Welcome back from the break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
It's The Hard Count coming at you. All right. So I was going to go over my Bleacher Report article, but I'm not going to be able to go into it as in-depth as I wanted to because it's midnight and I'm tired. So briefly, I will go over it, though, and you can go to BleacherReport.com, search for Andrew Garda. It's five disturbing trends facing today's National Football League. And, you know, as I say in the article, the NFL is the hottest thing in American sports. I mean, that's just the fact. Argue as much as you want with other leagues, but it is. Doesn't mean that it's a perfect league. And so I looked at five things, five trends, five issues that I really think need to be addressed by the NFL. And those five categories are the rule changes on protecting quarterbacks and wide receivers. I call that section, all players are equal, but some are more equal than others, because while those penalties do happen, Tom Brady's going to get that flag every time, whereas Mike Vick, Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez, Jay Cutler, Matt Schaub are not. It's inconsistent roughing the passer calls. Everybody knows it. Everybody can see it. It's also a huge issue when you're having referees try and call defensive players for hitting a quote-unquote defenseless receiver when that receiver puts their head down to duck underneath a tackle and the players inadvertently bang heads. League needs to define those rules, continue to find other ways to protect players, i.e. better equipment, mouth guards. Needs to keep everyone on the same page. People have to know what the problem is and what they have to do and what they don't do. I also talk about the obsession with the NFL and London. You guys have heard me rant about that before. It's a huge, huge mistake to be this focused on a European expansion. I don't care if it's a decade out. So I talk a little bit about the general problems with trying to play with a team or teams overseas. Everything from travel time, travel distance, change in hours, just a mess. I retouch on something I wrote at Cheesehead TV back during the lockout, the small market and big market teams, big market woes. I talk a little bit about the price of a ticket, PSLs, and fans, and how the fact that you're basically having to sell your child to be able to go to a game could be feeding the overall attitude of some fans, which is, you know, not good. Excuse me. The entitlement guys get by spending $150 on a ticket and then another $40 on parking and then three $8 beers. You know, then you get Patriot fans yelling at Rex Ryan. Now, you know, Rex Ryan or James Harrison or insert staff, coach, or player, they have to be bigger than that. There's a joke in there for Rex Ryan somewhere. But at what point do fans have a responsibility to just act like they're grown-ups? I talk a little bit about that, and I cap it off with some HGH, steroids, and the NFLPA question. Which is, when is the NFLPA going to agree to HGH testing? And when are they going to get the answers they need and say they want in order to okay the testing? I do kind of poke fun on the fact that their immediate response when the NFL said they were going to enforce it was two sentences and a quarter paragraph. But as George Atala, NFLPA spokesman, came out and told ProFootballTalk.com, you know, they want to make sure that the studies show that this testing is done right, is fair, and if someone disputes it, that it's not going to be a big pain in the ass. So go to BleacherReport.com, check out my latest article entitled Five Disturbing Trends Facing Today's National Football League. As I said, just go to BleacherReport.com, search Andrew Garda, and there you go. So with that out of the way, I apologize. I wanted to spend more time on that article, but you know, maybe we'll put a pin in it, come back next week. Let's talk a little playoff football here. Starting the NFC, Green Bay and San Francisco have locked down their playoff positions, or their playoff spots. They both have automatically made the playoffs. The Packers they've clinched, I believe, their division. Yeah, they've clinched the division. San Francisco has clinched the division. San Francisco, nobody's catching them. San Francisco and Green Bay do have two games between them. Green Bay, the wheels come off and they drop two games. San Francisco can leapfrog them for the number one spot. Don't expect that to happen right now. 3-4 spot, the NFC South champ right now in the three spot. New Orleans at 9-3, and the Dallas Cowboys clinging in every sense of the word as NFC East champ. Last two spots are Chicago at 7-5 in the fifth spot, and Atlanta 7-5 in the sixth spot. Detroit at 7-5 right behind them. The Giants at 6-6. Seattle at 5-7. Arizona at 5-7. Arizona and Seattle probably really don't have a chance, but they're not that far out. So if they both win out, they have a shot at making the playoffs. The Giants also have a shot and a huge game against the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas this week. This is really, there are two games. The Giants actually play the Dallas Cowboys twice in the next four games. This is big. I'm not sure that another team is going to come in via wild card in the NFC East, or from the NFC East. Chicago, can they hang on with Caleb Haney and with Matt Forte down for the next 4 weeks? With Marion Barber and Khalil Bell running the rock? Atlanta may get lucky, because I really felt like Detroit was going to jump back over Atlanta sometime very soon. But Chicago, Yeah, they're very close to epically collapsing. It's going to be some good, good games. And by the way, as long as you're over at Bleacher Report, you can actually look up my Monday article, which was the top 25 games for the remaining schedule, which details a lot of these various games. AFC Conference, New England and Baltimore, number one, number two, both with 9-3. Houston at the third spot, also at 9-3. Denver, a surprising 7-5, unless you were me and you made the bet with Aaron Nagler that they would be 8-8 by the end of the year. One win away from a very delicious dinner of some sort. AFC West champion Denver Broncos in the fourth spot. Pittsburgh Steelers, 9-3 in the fifth spot. Probably locked in there. The only way they'll really move is if Baltimore falters and they jump over Baltimore. But those two teams probably in the playoffs unless both of them collapse epically. And Cincinnati clinging, again, that word, 7-5 in the sixth spot. Tennessee right behind them at 7-5. Oakland 7-5. Jets 7-5. Buffalo, Kansas City, San Diego. Yeah, technically they're still in at 5-7, especially with so many different teams ahead of them with the 7-5. But it's going to be awfully difficult for them to recover, given that they've choked away some opportunities over the last month or so. I'd say, to me, I think Cincinnati's close to collapsing. They still have a shot at hanging on here. I don't really see Tennessee making it in. Oakland has a shot. Oakland is going to come down to Oakland and Denver. And they do play. They did play already. So they've split. So it's going to come down to who can come out of that schedule ahead. The Jets have a shot, but Sigmund Bloom was joking with me, fellow football guy and friend over in Texas. I was joking with me that just like in 2009, the Jets have everybody right where they want them at 7-5. Sanchez has to keep playing mistake-free football, and the offensive line has to do a good job and continue to do a good job of keeping him from being sacked. And even then, like they play Kansas City this week, they should be able to win that game. There's a lot of shouldas. They see the Giants. That's going to be a brutal game. They don't have an easy schedule going down the stretch. That's what happens when you make the AFC Championship. So again, it's one of those things where there are a lot of permutations that could come through here. Well, we're going to do my picks in just a minute. Let's talk about the games that I think are the most important regular season games this coming week. And again, if you go to my writer's page in Bleacher Report, NFL playoff picture, the 25 most important remaining regular season games, you can read about all of the weeks. My marquee matchup for this week is the Giants at the Dallas Cowboys. Giants really desperately need this win, especially after a tough loss to the Packers. That has some huge implications because of the NFC East race. The best of the rest, Cleveland at Pittsburgh. Cleveland, I mean, it smells like a blowout, but Cleveland will come to play and would love to help knock Pittsburgh out of the playoff race. And I believe they play Pittsburgh twice in the last 4 weeks, so they have the opportunity to really punk them. They'll play tough. I don't know that they're going to be able to keep up with Pittsburgh. Thursday night game, though, anything is possible. Kansas City at the Jets. Chiefs pretty much dead in the water, barring a miracle. But they can play spoiler. And the Jets are desperate to win. They need to keep playing a solid football, which they really haven't done very much of the last couple months. Jets need to win every game because they've lost the tiebreaker to Denver and Oakland. Cincinnati and Tennessee have to lose one game also for them to jump over it. New Orleans at Tennessee, of course, Tennessee factoring in pretty strongly in that AFC wildcard battle. And New Orleans wanting to stay ahead of Atlanta, big game for them as well. I don't foresee Tennessee coming over that. We'll talk about this in a couple minutes. Houston at Cincinnati, also a very big game. As I said, Cincinnati losing to Pittsburgh kind of hurts their playoff chances quite a bit. Houston trying to stay on top of their division should be able to, but you know, TJ Yates, now Andre Johnson's hurt again. There are some concerns here. I can see Houston dropping this game, although, you know, as a Jets fan, hopefully not. And finally, Chicago at Denver. You know, on paper, not that long ago, this looked like a Denver loss, but I have to tell you, Caleb Haney, no Matt Forte. You know, if Von Miller is back for this game, I think Denver can run away with this. I think this could be a situation where Denver gets out in front and then grinds the clock. You know, no Jay Cutler, no Matt Forte. It's a real problem. So those are the big games that you want to watch this weekend to keep an eye on what's going on in the NFL. So I would watch those games very closely. Giants at Dallas, Cleveland at Pittsburgh, Kansas City at the Jets, New Orleans at Tennessee, Houston at Cincy, Chicago at Denver. That is your slate of big games for this coming week. And we'll do this every week from here on out. The games you really need to concentrate on. And let's wrap this bad boy up and talk schedule. My picks for this week. Like I said, I haven't done them in the last couple weeks, so a little rusty, kids, but that's all right. Start off with the Cleveland at Pittsburgh game. I'd love to say that Cleveland comes in and wins this game, but a banged-up Colt McCoy, a banged-up Peyton Hillis, and an okay defense, I can't see them going into Heinz Field and coming away with a win there, unfortunately, so I'm going to pick Pittsburgh there. Kansas City at the Jets, call me Homer. But Kansas City is not looking all that good. Kyle Orton's hurt, which means Tyler Palko's back in. Woo! They're not going to be able to run the ball. They're not going to be able to throw the ball. Sanchez is going to play mistake-free yet again. Now if only special teams can do that. But either way, the Jets at home, they're going to beat Kansas City. Tampa Bay at Jacksonville, it's going to be a tough game for both of them. Curious to see if Josh Johnson gets a second straight start here. Maurice Jones-Drew is going to have a good day, but I have to tell you, I really feel Tampa Bay in this game. I think Tampa Bay is going to be able to overcome Jacksonville and force Gabbert to make some bad throws and some panicked look on his face. Sunshine is not going to be able to get it done. Tampa Bay over Jacksonville, that's my first underdog of the week, or road dog of the week, I should say. New England at Washington. I don't give Washington a chance of beating New England. They did, you know, I don't know what they were doing against the Jets. They looked like they were able to move the ball, but they just couldn't do it. It was like a Jets bend, don't break. New England can get thrown on, but I just don't expect this to be very close. New England's going to win this, so that's two dogs in a row. Atlanta at Carolina, big game. This is one that could have made my list of important games, but I was trying to keep it under 10 games. It's just about everything's important this week. Atlanta trying to secure that last playoff spot as well as continue to have a shot at the division. Carolina not happy with the way things have been going the last couple weeks. Cam Newton will come in. He'll play well. Steve Smith probably bounced back from last week's mediocre thing. But the fact of the matter is that I think Atlanta has too much on the ball, too many weapons. Another road dog, 3 in a row. I'm starting to feel nervous about that. But it all ends here, Indianapolis at Baltimore. I don't even need to explain this one to you. This is going to be the Baltimore Ravens. They may lap Indianapolis on this game. Philadelphia at Miami. Not that long ago, I would have called Philadelphia running away. Now, the big question here is whether Mike Vick and Jeremy Maclin play. If they play, I think Philadelphia wins this game. If it's Vince Young, I think Miami wins this game. So I will tweet out my pick come Sunday morning. How's that? Right now, I'm going to say Vic and Maclin are not playing, so I'm going to take Miami. If both of them are playing, then I may change that pick. I'll just forget tweeting it. Miami, if they're not playing. Philadelphia, if Vic and Maclin are there. Minnesota at Detroit. This is going to be a get-back-on-track game for Detroit. Minnesota, Christian Ponder was able to play pretty well, but he did have a soul-crushing interception that he threw, which lost the game for them against Denver. Is Adrian Peterson going to be back? If he's back, they have a better shot, but I think Detroit's got too many weapons. And even though they don't have Dominican Sue, It's all right against Minnesota. They still have Fairley. They still have some other good pieces on the defense. I'm going to take Detroit at home over Minnesota. New Orleans at Tennessee. I think Tennessee could give New Orleans a run for their money. I can't even get that sentence out of my mouth. No, this is going to be a New Orleans Saints game that is going to be controlled from stem to stern by Drew Brees and the offense. So New Orleans over Tennessee at Tennessee. Houston at Cincinnati. Yeah, my biggest question is whether Andre Johnson is going to play or if they shut him down for the playoffs. I have to say Cincinnati is desperate. I think they bounce back from a pretty rough outing. And as much as I like TJ Yates, that Cincinnati defense is pretty solid. That front seven is dangerous. I don't think that TJ Yates is going to have a second good game in a row, especially without Andre Johnson. I'm taking Cincinnati at home over Houston. Chicago at Denver, as I said in the previous segment. Jay Cutler, Matt Forte, this is a much different game, but they do not exist. This is even worse if Von Miller shows up. But either way, Denver's gonna win this game. You know, flat out, at home, lots on the line. It may be close, it may be ugly, but it will be a win for Denver, pulling them to 8 wins on the season, and Aaron Nagler can then buy me dinner. San Francisco at Arizona. San Francisco is on a tear. I don't think Arizona's going to be able to slow them down. Sure, Kevin Cobb is back and he's playing well, but San Francisco's defense is going to be too much for him. I'm taking San Francisco on the road. Buffalo at San Diego. I just cannot get behind Buffalo. They have looked terrible the last few weeks. The exception of Brad Smith, and that gadget play can only go so far. San Diego seems to have suddenly lit a fire. Phillip Rivers played well this past week. Ryan Matthews, Mike Tolbert, everybody seems to be doing well. Vincent Brown is good. Vincent Jackson has been playing okay. Malcolm Floyd is back. I think San Diego is going to win this game, but they're kidding themselves if they make the play. They think they're going to make the playoffs, but Buffalo is just too much of a mess. Green Bay welcoming Oakland to Lambeau Field. I think Oakland can give Green Bay a run for its money. I think this is actually a dangerous game for Green Bay, but at the end of the day, there are just too many weapons. Green Bay over Oakland at home. New York Giants at Dallas. Huge, huge, huge game. Miles Austin may be back. Laurent Robinson going to be playing. Dez Bryant, Jay Witten. There's a lot of talent on the offense for Dallas. Decent defense. The Giants, Ahmad Bradshaw is back. Hakeem Nicks is relatively healthy. Eli Manning is Eli Manning. Both Manning and Romo have their issues. They both screw up badly on occasion. It's going to be a question of whose defense steps up. Unfortunately for the Giants, they just drop too many balls when they get thrown to their, you know, corners and safeties. It's going to be really tough to beat Dallas in Dallas. And I'm pulling for the Giants, but I think Dallas is going to win this one. Finally, St. Louis at Seattle. I'm sorry, I fell asleep there for a second. It's tough to go into Seattle and win. It's really tough when you're playing as badly as the Rams have been playing. So I'll keep this short and sweet. Marshawn Lynch and Skittles will win over Sam Bradford and mediocre football play. And that, our Garters picks for the week. And that is going to do it for the Hard Count this week. I want to thank everybody for stopping by and listening. Of course, I want to thank the guys at CheeseheadTV.com for hosting this podcast. And I want to thank Aaron Nagler for my impending dinner, because the Denver Broncos are going to have 8 wins. All of those things are awesome, and so are you guys. I do appreciate you listening. It's been a great run so far on the Hard Count. I have really enjoyed doing this podcast. Still trying to work it out so that I can do it live at some point, but right now my brain's about to melt, so it's very hard to do in the middle of the week. We'll arrange something. We'll do this. We'll get this going at some point, even if it's the off season. But again, thanks for the Cheesehead TV guys for hosting it. Thanks for everybody for listening. You can check me out at CheeseheadTV.com from the press box. It'll be up either Wednesday or Thursday this week. You can catch the fantasy triage over at footballguys.com, and later on Thursday Night Lights. I want to say Friday Night Lights because I'm watching the show. Thursday Night Lights will give you the idea of what is going to be worth starting in the Thursday night game. And, of course, you can check out my articles over at BleacherReport.com, the 5 things facing the NFL that need to be improved. And, of course, check out the NFL Player playoff picture the 25 most vital games in the remaining 4 weeks. I'm Andrew Garda. Thank you for listening. I will see you guys same bat time, same bat channel, here on The Hard Count on CheeseheadTV.com. You've been listening to The Hard Count.
Let's go again!
With your host, Andrew Garda.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.